Hello, everybody, and welcome. Welcome to our support call. We just keep adding more, so we decided at the last minute that we would add today. It was a really busy week this week, so I was just not in any place to be able to predict, and finally got my Friday schedule straightened out, and here we are. So I'm here to support you guys. I love that background, David. And the peacocks are one of my favorites. They have all my favorite colors, and it's beautiful. So we're here to support you wherever you are. I know everybody's at different stages. Some of you are reintroducing things. Some of you are still eliminating things. Some of you are confused. Some of you need help. And it's been about a week since we've done one of these. So whatever you need help with today is what we're here for. I don't have a presentation planned. I do need to make sure that we stay on time today so that I can get to my interview. I have an interview for a summit that's happening after this, a sleep summit, which I'm excited about. Get to talk about sleep and its effects on blood sugar and leptin and all that kind of stuff. So here we are. So who has questions? Who has comments? I'd love a check-in. I see Christine and Wheaton and David. So we'll go to Christine.
There I am. Okay. Hi. This is, I guess, day 14 of since I started with the fast. And the good news is I'm able to eat a lot more foods. I mean, on the green list with the sulfur.
Yeah, exactly. Eliminating the ones you found were causing problems, right? You haven't tried to put any of those back. And I don't recommend that. Give yourself some time.
The good news, you know, I've been struggling with the gut for a while. You know, they have me on every 3 years for colonoscopy because I had polyps and stuff like that. So anyway, this is, I feel like a miracle. I mean, all of this is coming together for me, but I still have some questions. Like when I'm, you know, there's fear about adding stuff back. The good news, what I discovered is that if I have a second movement during the day and I do a fiber, Dr. Data said to add some fiber. So I have one of those fiber and I do your multi pro like an hour and a half after my meal. And I eliminate and I don't have gas. So that would make sense why I had gas at night. If I had it, it was fermenting in there.
It was fermenting, right.
Yes. So that's really been nice. No gas. And I think it's the elimination too. So,
right.
And so have you ever worked with the biome test?
Yeah, I've never ordered one. I will just admit, I've worked with them when people bring them in. Okay. And quite frankly, I just haven't really found a great value to them.
Okay.
Some people love them. They come up with a food plan for everybody. Here's your power foods and here's your this foods. And I'm like, how did you come up with that? I like to know the science, right? I like to understand why. Why are you telling somebody that arugula is their power food or fish is their power food, or that they should stay away from these other foods because they're not doing they're not doing an allergy thing. They're looking at the microbiome. And maybe if I understood it more, maybe if they documented it better, I wouldn't be so frustrated with it. So there's a lot of really interesting information. I haven't personally found it to be very clinically relevant.
Okay.
All right. There are people who get them back and then they try to do it. I say, okay, look, I don't understand it. I don't know what their science is. They don't document it, but just try it. Like try what they're saying for a month. And most people that are either reluctant to, because there's some foods that they know affect their blood sugar that they're saying are their power foods and they don't want their blood sugars climbing to 200 or other kinds of things. So I haven't got many people to actually follow it.
Right? Yeah.
So it's like they tell you all these foods and then you're suddenly going, oh, I gotta eat that. That gives me gas. Oh, I gotta eat that. That caused me to have a headache. That causes my blood sugar to go up. So I've never ordered them. I ordered one for myself after I heard a talk on it and they showed this app and I'm like, oh, that shows you the whys. But nobody, I've never seen it in getting the report from anybody else. So that test is sitting on my table with a stack of other tests. And one day I'll do it and be able to really see for myself if doing what they say, if I could do what they say, made sense. If they put pineapple as my power food and I'm supposed to eat it twice a week, I'm like, I can't eat it. First of all, it's tropical. It's not local, you know, but I love pineapple, but I can't eat it that often. It'll kill my blood sugar. So the jury's out for me on that one.
Yeah. My naturopath had me do it like a year ago. And I agree with you on the food stuff, but when I didn't understand it, when I went back and looked at it, I had sulfur gas, I had all, and motility issues. So it was right on that.
So it was that
And they want you to, you know, the supplements, I don't trust that at all. You know, doctor's data was a lot more helpful and NutriVal for supplements for me.
That's so, typically anyway, what I do. And I don't, and maybe I'm just a skeptic, but I'm always a skeptic about, you do a test and then they tell you what supplements to take and it just happens to be the supplements they sell.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you for, and then my question, I have a few more, is that my blood, I'm usually in the 70s and 80s with blood sugar. And obviously with the water fast, I was 66 in autophagy and all of that.
Right.
But after, when I started adding foods, my blood sugar was high 80s and 90s, which I know is okay, but for me, it was high. And then I think today's the 14th, it's back to the 70s. Is there a reason why it went up?
You know, your body's getting used to you leaving out some foods that actually lower blood sugar, right? So a lot of the greens and the sulfur kind of foods will have an impact and keep your blood sugar lower, but maybe your body just getting used to it. Maybe it was a little bit of a stress eliminating some of those foods, and going through a fast is actually stressful, you know, on the body, even though it's helpful, it's fast, it's helpful. So if it's going back to normal and it's normal, I wouldn't worry about it.
Yeah. And I mean, I wasn't concerned about 88 or 92. I mean, it was not that bad, but it was, for me, it was surprising.
Mm-hmm. And then you always want to question those things. So it is good to question those kinds of things.
I thought I had bad strips. So I kept going through the strips and now it was that high.
It was that high. Yeah.
So, I'm in combination with elimination. I'm looking at your grand program, the 23 day where you do one day of green stuff or green juices or.
You started out with the 7 days. Yeah. But you have to just be careful and make sure you stay away from the sulfur stuff.
Yeah. I mean, well, the first week was zucchini. I'm at a zucchini and protein powder, and now I can have lettuces. My question is, I obviously it's going to be a while before I add in the garlic and the onions and those foods, but arugula, you know, and that's considered a sulfur food.
Yeah. How about sprouts? First of all, have you added sprouts in?
Yes.
Sunflower sprouts and some of those shoots and stuff could be helpful, you know, to get more greens and more chlorophyll in you. I would say, I would like to see you off of that stuff for a month.
A month. Okay.
Yeah, you've had this problem for a really long time.
Yes.
And I would say off of them for a month, work on the gut healing, work on healing your gut, and then try like a bit, right? Yours is obvious. It's not like I wouldn't do this, the reintroduction, the same way that I recommended for an allergy. Right. Because for you, it's like, okay, yeah, I just ate arugula 3 times today and now I can't button my pants and I'm
right.
You know, right.
Running out of the room.
Exactly. So it would be small amounts added to what you already know works, because what you want to find is your threshold. And as you're healing your gut and as you're getting more tolerant, you may be able to increase it. Unlike if you're adding back a food that you have an allergy to, you know, you want to actually know if you have an allergy to it. And that's very different, right? So it's quantity wise. So you may find that you can have this much arugula, but you can't have this much arugula, right? And that's fine. So you have that and you vary it with your other stuff.
Yeah, I was eating a lot of those garlic and onions. I think I ate every day.
And you said cabbage, you knew caused you.
Well, I knew those, but that surprised me on the, I was in denial about, I knew about the garlic, but I was in denial.
Well, you don't eat huge quantities like you would for cabbage anyway. So what I would do is start with the ones that you never really knew you had a problem with. So start with arugula.
Okay.
Right? If you thought you were good, okay on arugula, then do it, right? Don't start with cabbage because you knew you had a problem with it, right? And whatever, cauliflower, I think there were a couple of others you said were okay.
Cauliflower and cabbage were the big ones.
Were the big ones, yeah. So I would start with the ones that you didn't know you had symptoms with and just try adding small amounts and just create variety more so in your diet.
Yeah. And really, I have not ever, you know, played with the foods that I could have, like fennel and those things. I mean, it's amazing. I mean,
world of food
out there. I've ignored those foods, and it's amazing how you can make things flavorful without garlic and onions.
Yeah, so, well, fennel is amazing. It's so, yeah. And even things like, I don't know how high in sulfur they are, but like daikon radish has that.
Yeah,
that
they're high. It's on the no list.
Yeah.
And jicama. What about, a month, but what about the ones, see the FODMAP ones, like mushrooms are on the FODMAP, but it's not on the sulfur. Could I add that sooner or everything for a month?
Usually FODMAPs, I like to see people off for 3 weeks.
Okay.
3 to 4 weeks. Again, while you're working on the microbiome, right? Good probiotics, whatever you can tolerate. You know, I would, given what you've experienced, I would be going with D-lactate-free probiotics, bifidobacter. And if you're going with any of the lactose, it's D-lactate-free. So they don't produce that lactate, which causes the bloating and the gas.
Okay. And then, that answered that question, I think. So 3 weeks, I could add some of the FODMAP back, and then a month for the sulfur producing foods.
Yeah.
Okay. I think I got it. I think that's it for now. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. You can.
I just can't rave that your chart, the food religions and the food, is better than anything Biome would ever do. I mean, that is like, it's been a godsend. I just can't say enough. Thank you.
You know what? We'll keep adding to it as we learn, but you know, it took a lot of time. It was easy for the first bunch, like some of them are obvious, and then you just start to go, well, what about, you know, purple green peas or whatever? So I'm glad that it's helpful. I love charts. Charts just are.
Oh, I do have one last question. It said string beans were, what's the difference between green beans were sulfur producing, but string beans were okay. Aren't they the same thing?
I thought they were the same thing.
Okay, well, you have green beans in one section and string beans in another. And so I was just, so it's string beans, or it said it was okay.
I always think of them as the same thing, yeah.
Okay, thank you.
They have yellow beans, there's purple beans. They are legumes, so they might, you know, have problems with gas forming, but they're not the same as like kidney beans, right? They're meant to be eaten raw. Okay, great, thank you. So we have, let me take your hand down. We have Wheaton, David, and then there's a bunch of other people. Margaret, Yenny, Kimberly, and Stephanie. Okay, so Wheaton.
Hi, I have two questions. I'm 19 days in on the elimination / FODMAP / low oxalate.
Yep.
Feeling good. Mentally, I'm feeling great.
Awesome.
Yes, I'm very happy about that. But I'm not getting enough protein. And I spoke with Lisa and she said, find a pure rice protein powder or a pure pea with nothing else. And I didn't know if there was one that you could recommend.
You know, and I hesitate to say the fermented ones, because the fermented ones do tend to be more easy to digest. But also if you're having problems, you might have problems with the fermented ones. So, Designs for Health has a good pure pea protein that tastes decent. I tried Mercola's once and I like threw it away. It tasted so god awful. I don't know why. It just was awful. I kept trying. Threw it away. Who else has a pure pea? I would just look. I don't have anyone in particular, other than I know the Designs for Health one is good. I've had it.
Okay. Thank you. And the second question is, you were so helpful on explaining how diarrhea works, staying in the small intestine for too long.
And then boom, opening up the floodgates. And
right. And not looking at the food you might've just eaten 15 minutes prior, but what you ate 8 to 10 hours earlier.
Excuse Never drink tea and talk at the same time. Went down the wrong way. Sorry. Okay, go ahead.
So I understand that now. Thank you for that explanation. My next part of that question is, does gas flatulence work the same way? You look at the food you didn't just eat, but the 1 hour prior?
Generally. I mean, sometimes things can trigger stuff to move quickly and, you know, ferment. But, you know, think about the length of your intestinal tract, right? Things sit in your stomach for like up to 2 hours, depending on how complex it is. And then it moves into the small intestine and then it goes down and the gas is actually happening in the large intestine, right? So it's not necessarily the food you just ate. It's more likely to be the food that you ate a while back. Now, if you have a pain in here, right? I can't see me, but in the stomach area, right? If you have burning and sensation there or some weird sensation up higher, then it's more likely to be something you just ate, right? If I eat something and now suddenly I have a burning feeling, it's like, okay, must be that I ate too much ginger or I had too much cayenne or whatever it might've been. Or even if you have like a nausea kind of feeling, that's up here, but gas is way down here. Yeah.
Okay. So having cruciferous vegetables that potentially are more gas producing is okay, or to be expected to a certain degree?
They're gas producing when there's things out of balance.
Oh,
right.
Okay, so everyone
people say cucumbers make you burp. Well, they don't necessarily. I don't get gas or bloating from cucumbers, and they're considered, buy the burp free ones. So it usually implies that you're not quite digesting them as well as you could, or that there's some organisms living in the small intestine. And that's the other thing. If sometimes all these great bacteria that colonize your large intestine, they move up and they start to grow in the small intestine, or they don't make it all the way down. Yeah, right. And that creates the SIBO kind of things and that almost immediate. So if it's a bloating kind of thing, right, that happens usually pretty quickly. That's in the small intestine. And that's usually related to something you quite frequently ate within the last few hours.
Okay.
But when you get gas down low, it could very well be something that you ate the day before that's finally making it there, or a few days before that's finally making it there.
Okay. So broccoli is an okay thing for me to eat, or I should stay away from that now?
Broccoli is high in oxalate.
Oh.
Yeah. It's moderate in oxalate. It's not super high in oxalate. So broccoli has been a food in the past that has been fine for you and you've been away from it for a while, then by all means, put it back in. But I'm going to caution you the same way I did with Christine, is that we're not necessarily looking at a food allergy here. We're looking at that food constituent, right? The sulfur, the FODMAP, the oxalate. So don't go in and do what I say for food allergy detection, which is just eat it all day long, you know, or three times a day, because I don't want to have you writing in that you're, you know, your waistline, you look like you're 9 months pregnant.
Right.
Because it suddenly, especially if you've been away from it a while, you may overreact. So I would say, yeah, that's how you can start to introduce things, right? Okay. You take a small amount, you say, okay, I have this particular meal that I know works well. I've been eating it over the last, you know, couple of weeks. And I'm going to just add some steamed broccoli. And with the oxalates, the best way is actually to boil the broccoli and then throw away the water, because some of the oxalates do come out in the water.
Okay.
Okay. And then take some magnesium citrate with it, or calcium citrate. Calcium magnesium is a good combination of citrate with the meals. So anytime you are testing higher oxalate foods, if you take calcium magnesium citrate with that meal, it's going to bind to the oxalates and pull them out through your stool and not allow them to get into circulation and cause problems.
Okay. Would it still, if I take the CalMag citrate, would that still let me know that there are symptoms and perhaps I shouldn't be introducing that food?
No, it's going to tell you have a way to manage it.
Okay. Perfect.
Right. Because with an allergy, you don't want to eat any of it because it may be having this little obscure thing that you don't see, but over time it builds up. Like it's causing inflammation in your thyroid or it's causing inflammation in your joint and you don't see it until 3 days later. With the oxalates, we want to be able to have you eat as much oxalate as you can and not, let me just take that back because I don't want to say that. As much oxalate as makes sense, right? You don't want to, I don't want you to get to the point of eating, being able to eat spinach all day long because it's just not good for anybody. I don't care if you have an oxalate sensitivity or not. I just tend to gravitate towards spinach, goes a little bit of spinach here and a little bit of spinach there. If I'm going to make a big salad and it's one green, I'm using arugula. And it's not because I have an oxalate sensitivity, but I know that the oxalates can drag your minerals out, right? Okay. And I don't want to, you know, if I'm eating a meal high in calcium and I am eating a lot of oxalates, a lot of that calcium is going to be dragged out. So if you add the extra calcium, right, then you're getting the benefit of the food because there's extra calcium there for the oxalates to latch onto and grab out.
Perfect.
Okay.
Thank you. You're welcome. Perfect.
Sometimes I go into more of a technical explanation because I know I can see the light come on and go, oh yeah, now I understand why. If I just say to you, just eat calcium, just take calcium, magnesium with your meal. And I don't explain it later on. You're going to go, why'd she want me to do that?
Right.
And you may remember, you may not, but I just gave you this long-winded explanation and you're going, oh yeah, I better take calcium, magnesium with my meal or I'm going to lose my calcium because you know, it's going to go out in my poop.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. All right, David. Okay.
Well, it's morning here and raining.
You're in LA?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was talking to a friend last night who said, yeah, last week it was 80 and sunny and now it's 40 and raining.
Yeah, I was doing yoga out in the front yard. It was great.
In the rain?
No, last week.
Oh, last week.
In the sun, I actually had to strip down to just a small shirt. So
nice.
Yeah. Set my little computer, dragged out the door, wires running into the house.
Nice. Oh, that's great.
The protein was mentioned earlier. At one point I decided I wanted to find a hemp protein. So I looked down the aisle and I picked the one that had the least ingredients, hemp protein.
Hemp protein, just it.
Brought it home. And it tastes horrible. Haven't used it since. So now I know why the other ones are on the shelf.
Yeah, to make them taste better. Now you can make it taste better. Take things you like and you know, and you can add some, you know, flavorings to it, vanilla, whatever. Hemp seeds are actually very high in protein.
I have those. Yeah.
So, you know, you just kind of look up the value, like how much is in a half a cup of hemp seeds and how do I make, like I love making salad toppers with hemp seeds and ground up walnuts and then put spices and seasonings in it and sprinkle that on everything because it tastes so good. It makes everything. Plain old broccoli, I can eat a big pot full like this because it's got this amazing stuff sprinkled on it. So, you know, you just have to calculate it and see. Yeah. I'm not a big fan of protein powders. Like, yeah, they're necessary evils. Let's just say, right. Well, at times when you're doing an elimination diet and you're having to test things and you're very low in protein or, you know, you're traveling and the protein that they're offering is not something you would even consider eating. Right. There's good, but, for day to day, like I'll do them periodic. Well, I it's my necessary evil when I want to get my collagen support and I make ice cream out of it. I haven't done that in months because it's been too cold out to want ice cream. Right. So you find something like but I do a lot of hemp seeds themselves. So I sprinkle hemp seeds on lots of things and they still have flavor to them. When you extract out the protein alone, it's kind of like, right.
Yeah, I do find myself shying away from the blender because I'm making small quantities and it seems like a lot of it just stays in there unless I spend a lot of time trying to scrape it out.
Get one really nice flexible silicone spatulas.
Will do.
And there's a set of them on Amazon. It's like $15 and they're all one piece. So you don't end up breaking off the handles, break off or whatever. Yeah. And there's all different sizes. And there's some really nice sizes for getting under the blade and down in there. But that silicone really bends. It's really flexible. So it helps you to get things out pretty easily.
Awesome. I'm glad I asked. So I had this first hint that I have oxalate sensitivity from having, you know, a large amount of spinach 2 days in a row. I woke up with the slightly gritty eyes. What are the other signs of oxalate sensitivity now that I've removed the spinach mostly? I woke up this morning with just a little bit of eye grittiness. What other things can I look for to see if I'm not eliminating?
Yeah, you know, it's so variable from person to person. The obvious ones would be that it would be kidney type pain, you know, pain in your back, grittiness in your urine. So if you look at your urine, if you feel, I mean, you may feel a little bit of grittiness in your urine. Some people get brain fog. Some people get bloated. Some people just don't feel so good, right? And some people don't know they have oxalate sensitivities until we see it on a test and then we remove it. And then they add it back in and you go like you, kind of like, oh, maybe it's been, and then you go, whoa. So, you know, it can be anything. And if you look at the chart, right, that I have those two chart. One has the food and the other one has symptoms. Just go look down the reds and the yellows. So the reds are obvious and then the yellows are, you know, maybe possible symptoms.
Because you mentioned earlier in this call some things, oh, oxalates in broccoli. And it's like, I haven't gotten that far in my investigation to know.
And some people, unless you're super sick, I don't care. I don't consider it oxalates in broccoli because it's for me, because I'm not trying to go, you know, I don't have grit in my eyes or something like that. But for people who are very sensitive, you be careful. There's charts that show you how much oxalate is in stuff. So for example, spinach is like, let's just say spinach is 900. Kale, like the curly kale might be 400, but the dinosaur kale, the Jacinto kale is like 40 for the same quantity. So you can see there's so much variation in the foods. Arugula is big fat, zero. Right? Romaine lettuce is close to zero. You know, sprouts, most of the sprouts are zero or close to zero. So you could still get a lot of greens, but you'd have to be careful about the curly kale, which is the more common kale that you'd see out there. And
so I still had red kale and green kale in the fridge and used some yesterday. So that might explain. So I can look on the chart. You mentioned a test for it. What would that test be?
Well, there's an organic acid test, which has the 20, they do like 24 hours and it gets everything. It's a $300-$400 test. I don't remember the 300 probably. And then there's, you can actually go through Quest Labs or LabCorp and ask for a 24-hour urine oxalate.
Oh, okay. Not easily done.
No, it's not. You have to collect for 24 hours. So, yeah.
So it's easier to play with my foods and figure it out that way.
Yeah. And figure out where your sensitivity lies. If you are, like, I have a lot of genetics for it. I just had another lab analysis. I have a lot of genetics for oxalates. So my only naturally, I've always, like, once I learned about oxalates and how it yanks out your minerals, like, you know, I'm just going to not eat too many of them. But I don't go crazy. I don't not eat spinach. I don't not eat collards. I don't not eat chard. You know, I just don't eat tons of it, right? And I focus on my lower oxalate stuff more than I do. Now, but on the other hand, I eat a lot of almonds. I don't eat a lot of almonds. I gravitate more towards like pecans and actually walnuts. I'm really in this mode of walnuts and they don't have as high an oxalate, but they do have oxalate. So I don't know that I'm really sensitive to it. But I think it's trying to find balance. If you're one of these people who just, I going on this health craze and I'm going to eat all the spinach smoothies. And that's because that's what people do. They go to one vegetable, they eat mostly that you can really feel worse, right? Like, oh, I'm eating all this greens and drinking all these smoothies. And now I feel like crap. Why? Well, because you're gravitating towards these high oxalate things.
Okay. Well, it seems I've pulled enough foods out that I can actually make these distinctions now. And getting overall healthy enough is like, I'm going to my functional doctor and ordering the next round of tests. And it's like, compared to all her other patients and compared to what I was for the first 8 years seeing her, it's like, why am I bothering? I'm fine. No, I've got some more optimizing to
very,
do.
They're small distinctions, right? Yeah. I have a stack of tests and that's why I've never run them because it's like, I feel fine. Why did I pay to get this test? Because I wanted to test the test out, right? And then it sits there for years. Literally, the kids are probably dead by now because they sit there for years because I feel fine. But it's those distinctions, right? And I want to continue to feel fine. So it would be good to fine tune my chemistry. But there's also the limit of you can go crazy, right? You can just like become food phobic. So just, I like your attitude of, yeah, okay, I'm going to play with this. I'm going to just see. Now, two nutrients, well, taking vitamin, calcium and magnesium with higher oxalate foods. So if you're out and you order a kale salad and you go, oops, that's curly kale. And you can have some calcium and magnesium and take it with it. And it's going to help you to dissipate the effects. But also overall, B6, vitamin B6 and magnesium are super important nutrients to help to, you know, pull the oxalates out of your system.
So the most recent vitamin C powder I bought has vitamin C in three forms. One of them has magnesium and one of them has calcium. So the proportions are like 10 times vitamin C to these other things.
Yeah, they're very small amounts.
Okay, those are too small to help with the oxalates.
I would say to help with the oxalates, if you're taking it with a meal with oxalates, somewhere in the 400 to 500 milligrams of calcium and magnesium.
Okay. Then on the same topic, I was reading up on oxalates. And it said that getting the calcium, magnesium, and oxalates in your gut, they combine and you eliminate them.
Yep.
If those co-occur in your kidney, not so good because they combine and make stones.
Exactly. And see, the point is you want to get them to combine in your gut and eliminate so they don't pass through the gut wall. They're only going to really, in any large quantity, pass into the bloodstream. I do this because that's my signal for leaky gut, right? Leaky gut. They can't get through, right? I can get through, right? So it's healing and sealing the gut. And creating it so that very little of oxalate is going to even make it through. If we know that if you have it in your urine, that it made it through the gut and you can prevent it from getting there by pulling it out with the calcium magnesium.
So that's my last question. I'm pretty sure if I'd tested intestinal permeability 5-10 years ago, I'd have just been off the charts because of my history of taking antibiotics.
Yeah.
But now I've been doing marshmallow root in the morning and the slippery elm in the evening, but those were capsules. So they aren't effective in the esophagus and stomach, but they're helping in the intestines.
But they're helping with the lower down. Yep.
And I haven't had any pain that felt like a stomach ulcer or anything in years. Yes, and I can not eat for 16 hours at a time. It's like, this is awesome. So now I'm wondering, should I even bother with any kind of testing? I'm about to talk to my doctor today to figure out the next round of Quest testing and then whatever functional tests we want to do. And I was wondering if Cyrix has a fairly expensive permeability test, but is there a test I can just add to my Quest check that kind of gives me a heads up as to whether or not to do the bigger
test?
I don't
know if Quest would have it, but there's one where you swallow lactulose and manulose, and then they measure how much of that comes out in your urine. So it's a urine test. I don't know that Quest has it. I think it's more of a functional test. And if it's an MD that's ordering it or a naturopath, you know, some people, it's really weird. They don't let you actually prescribe the lactulose and manulose. Like, it's like you have to have a license. So you can ask her if she knows anything about the gut permeability testing and what she might recommend.
Okay.
But, you know, do you need it? Here's my feeling about it. It's like, I just act as if I've never gotten tested for gluten. I just know I have a sensitivity. I know that it's in my genes and I know that how I feel when I eat it. Why waste my money? I'm not going to eat gluten suddenly if it says I'm not allergic. It might say I'm not allergic because I haven't had it in, you know, very long time.
Yeah.
Right. So I believe in, you know, yes, the testing's important, but if you can figure it out without the testing, it's awesome. Okay.
Thank you very much.
All right. We're going to move on to who is next? Kim. Oh, wait. Yenny and then Kimberly and then Stephanie. It looks like there were more people that had their hands up and they went away. Oh, Margaret, there you are. Why do you not show up on this list? Oh yeah, there you are. You're next, Margaret. I knew there was somebody ahead of Yenny. Margaret, Yenny, Kimberly, and Stephanie. Okay, Margaret, hi. Unmute.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
So I made this elixir from your herbal class, and I've been having it every morning. And it's basically cashew milk with a lion's mane, maca powder, quercetin, And then some cocoa and stevia. And the quercetin you recommended to me because I was having some nasal congestion.
Yeah.
And it's helped a lot. So I'm like really thrilled. It works better than Claritin.
Yay, that's so good to hear.
And so I've been having that every morning. I was having it for about a week. And then I know we're supposed to switch things up. So I said, well, let me make some almond milk. And I soaked almonds. And I, on Monday, had it with almond milk. And then on Tuesday, I had the same, basically the same drink. I mean, maybe sometimes I don't put the cocoa in it or the cacao powder.
Yeah.
But basically the same drink. And then my tongue got very irritated and a little swollen and on the second day of drinking it with the almond milk and kind of like not exactly blistery but that pain or I guess maybe irritation is the way to describe it. I was trying to figure out how exactly to describe it because it's not exactly burning but kind of.
But it's an inflammation.
Yeah.
There's an inflammation in your tongue. Had you been away from almonds for the length of time when you were doing, any length of time?
I mean, I probably had not been eating very many of them because I hadn't sprouted them yet. But maybe if I was really hungry, I might have had a few, but I hadn't really been eating them so much.
You might have an allergy to it.
Yeah. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to put this in my yellow to test column. Yep. And then Tuesday night, I was about to soak some walnuts because I wanted to make that walnut coconut or thing you showed us on the Practical Herbal Therapeutics. And I just ate a couple that hadn't been soaked yet and my tongue sprang back up. I'm like, well, maybe I've somehow gotten a sensitivity to nuts.
Well, maybe it's the inhibitors, the enzyme inhibitors, and maybe you didn't soak your almonds long enough, perhaps?
Well, you know what? These almonds were from Costco, and they were steam pasteurized, and I soaked them for a long time, but the water didn't get as, like, gunky as it normally would, and it also, they didn't really get little tails on them.
Yeah. Well, you've got some. Now, first of all, the sensitivity to nuts is a misnomer. Like, because they're all in different families, right? So you may have a sensitivity to the nuts that are in the family with cashews, which is totally different than the family with almonds. So generally when people are told they have an allergy to nuts, I don't think that that's a valid way to describe it. Maybe you have a sensitivity to nuts where you're not digesting, you're not making enough bile or lipase to digest them. Also, it could be mold, although cashews tend to be more likely to have mold on them than the almonds. But if they were old and they were pasteurized and you don't know what they were like before they were pasteurized, right?
Yeah.
Like if they're sproutable, if they're raw and you soak them and they plump up and they get these little tails on them.
They did plump.
They did plump
and split a little bit, but it seemed like, you know,
I would just put it on your,
they barely got tails.
I would put it on your suspicious list. I'd stay away from almonds completely for a week or so. Right. Yeah. And then the walnuts, it could very well be that you just need to soak them that, you know, there's.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too, but I'm kind of just like staying away right now because my tongue is much better, but it's still feeling irritated.
Okay. So if it was
still irritated. So I didn't know maybe, and I'm still drinking the elixir, but for a couple of days.
With the almonds or the other one?
Well, I'm still having everything, but I'm not doing the almond milk.
Okay.
You know, I stopped that after Tuesday.
After 2 days. Okay. So you do cashew milk one.
I stopped after Monday. So then for a few days I had like some cashew yogurt, some coconut yogurt in the fridge. So I was just mixing everything in the yogurt and eating it like that. And then I made some more cashew milk. So like this morning I had it with cashew milk. So I didn't know because these are also all new things to me to have regularly, the lion's mane, the maca powder, the quercetin.
Yeah, but you took it for a while and you were feeling better. So I'm more suspicious about the almonds. So I would not add anything new until your tongue goes back down to baseline.
Okay.
You can keep doing the elixir that you were doing because it wasn't causing a problem. The only change was the almonds.
Yeah. So
I would just strip out the almonds and don't add anything else new. Until your tongue clears up.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And how long should that take for it to?
It depends. Like, you know, you can.
I'm like on day four.
Quercetin. Well, yeah, but you then tried it with the walnuts and that may have aggravated it. So
that was the same day. It was.
Yeah.
It was on Monday.
So I would say, you know, probably 5 days to a week.
Okay. Okay. So it's not odd that it's still.
You can do things that are going to, you know, decrease the inflammation. If you tolerate
yeah.
it, okay.
I did do slippery elm a couple times and that seemed to help.
Yeah.
And I used that because that's what I had.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Slippery elm is great. And, you know, just hold it in your mouth, right? Don't swallow it right away. If it's the tongue that's irritated, just kind of.
Okay. I'll do that. Okay. And I had a couple other questions. So I had like a couple weird things happen since I started doing the elimination. And I will confess, I'm not like 100%. I mean, I still have some work to do. I'm not writing down what I eat. And I'm just kind of trying to eat what I know are safe foods for me.
Yep.
And I'll just be in the elimination phase for a while. And I'll eventually get to where I'm, you know, more, I'm sure how you would want us, a better student.
You know, everybody's different. Your life's different. You have different ranges. If somebody has like, they're down to five foods that they're eating during elimination, they're really rapidly wanting to get to the reintroduction. But if you got a wide range of foods that you're eating, you know, just enjoy feeling good so that you really can tell the difference.
So that's what I'm working on, and I'm eating vegetables that I never eat just because you said to have the variety, and but I know I could dial it in more. But I'm just trying to, like you said, feel better, and what I can do with my lifestyle and all the demands going on right now. I'm staying away from all the red foods, and I'm not measuring my blood sugar, and I am eating, you know, squash and sweet potato, but I just figure it's enough for me just to eat foods that I know that are good for me. And then as it goes on, I'll
fine tune it later. Absolutely agree with that. So what other questions?
So the weird things that happened. So after I've been doing the elimination for, I don't know, a week or two, I started getting like this manic energy at 10 p.m. Like I was starting to feel tired, like it's time to go to bed, and then I would just get this weird energy, and I have no idea, like, why am I getting at 10 p.m. I drank my elixir, you know, at probably around 9 a.m.
Yeah. I'm gonna just step in there and say we always want to know the why, and I'm always a big fan of why, but sometimes you just like, just take it when you get it. You got energy, take it, right? You didn't do anything, like you didn't need caffeine. You didn't take an elixir, but your body is like starting to process better. Your body is overall starting to be better. So, you know, as long as it's not contributing to not being able to sleep, right?
Yeah, no, it would just come. And then around 11, I'm like, okay, I'm ready to sleep.
Good, that's great. You're getting.
And the other weird thing is that like, more than 15 years ago, I put a sewing machine needle through this finger and they couldn't take the tip out. They said, yeah, so it's been in there and it hasn't bothered me until like about a week ago, started getting really tender. So both those things, the energy, my finger, like, I'm like, oh yeah, I have that needle in there.
It might be that your body's starting to get more, you know, it's going, oh, there's something foreign in there. Let's get rid of it.
Yeah, that's what I was feeling.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. So both of those things, the energy and my finger bothering me, they're like, they've lessened now.
How deep is that piece? Was it pretty far deep in there?
I mean, it's in the very tip of my finger. So I mean, my finger is not that
deep. You know, I'm thinking maybe something that would like heat, like soaking it into hot water, that's going to maybe help it pull that out, and maybe it'll surface and you'll be able to get rid of it.
It might. That would be interesting. So we'll see what happens. I'll keep you guys updated.
Hot water and some bentonite clay, which has a drying effect.
Okay. I do have some bentonite clay that I never did anything with.
It's worth it. A little poultice of it there. Who knows?
And then the final question I have is, you had mentioned about fungus and or practical herbal therapeutics. And I do have toenail fungus that has been there for I got it in 2011. And I just didn't know what it was, and I totally ignored it until it was really embedded, until it had really taken root.
Yeah. And there, are your nails turning yellowish and weird colors? And
not exactly yellow, but I don't know, more creamy color, I guess you could say.
Okay.
And so, you know, I'll use the fungal cream, and if I'm really diligent with it, it will go down. Also, if I'm really careful about my blood sugar, it gets better. I mean, like while I was on the sweet spot and all of that, but it just doesn't go all the way away.
Have you tried the tea tree and the wrapping it? And
I have done tea tree, not recently, but I have done that.
So you got to be diligent with tea tree. I mean, you've got to put that on there every night before you go to bed. You know, if it's on multiple toes, you can wrap it in gauze, put the socks on to hold it in place so that it's penetrating and saturating for multiple hours at a time.
Yeah. And I guess I picked it up when I was traveling international.
But, okay. And then castor oil is another one. There's a specific supplement that Thorne Research makes. They call it SF722. It's just their thing, but it's calcium undecylenic acid. It's an extract from castor bean oil that's very antifungal. So you can mix the tea tree.
Can you say what that is again? I wrote down the castor oil, but then I didn't quite get what you were
saying. SF722 from Thorne. And some people will get those little pellets and you stick a needle in them, squeeze it out, and you can get that out and you can put it on the areas of fungus.
Okay. Yeah. I was asking because you had mentioned that if you have it for more than, you know, a year, it's indicating some kind of gut issue.
It could. I mean, it depends on how you got it, right? If you got it because you were walking around barefoot in an area that had it endemic, it may be more local, right? It may be caused by that, and it's just hard to get rid of, especially in the toes.
You know, that's so what happened. I'm sure I picked it up from the hotel shower.
But then, you know, it doesn't hurt to look at your gut. It doesn't hurt to go into the grand part of the program and go in and, you know, look at the anti-candida recommendations. And also,
that's what I was wondering because I did go in there because I was looking for something for fungus. Grand, and I saw the candida and I didn't see anything about fungus, but it's the candida one that I would need to do.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then in the herbal class in the digestion, I think it was session 3, we had a whole section of the antimicrobials. So.
Okay. All right. Okay. That's great. Thank you so much.
Thank you. So next was Yenny, then Kimberly. So where are you, Yenny? There you are.
Hi, Dr. Marie. Good morning.
Hi, Yenny.
I want to let you know, I have a most recent lab work. So there are a couple of things high, there are a couple of things low. So I wanted to get some advice in terms of, you know,
this is specifically elimination diet questions. I would prefer that you do that on the regular, I think it's next week.
Next week?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. All right. Let me just ask one thing though. As sort of
smallly. You just disappeared. Where?
So I did ask.
Okay. Can you hear me? Yeah. You got garbling.
Okay. So let me ask a question that's more related to elimination. So I did ask I think maybe about 2 weeks ago about the nightshade. And I think I tested it again, I think about 2 days ago. It seems like even though the result was showing that it's not sensitive, but I think my joint is talking differently. Yeah, so I think I added, it's just a tiny bit of red bell peppers. Mm-hmm. In, you know, one of the, you know, cooking, and then a little bit tomatoes, even though I took out the seeds and, you know, and all the juice, but there's still some joint sensitive, you know,
it sounds like you should avoid completely for a couple of weeks, let things settle down and see if you can add them back later.
Okay. All right. Yeah. What kind of food that is high in iron and sodium?
Well, a lot of things are high in sodium, celery and, you know, sea vegetables and all that. High in iron, green leafy vegetables are high in iron.
Like any greens?
Yeah, if you look them up on the chart, look them up in Chronometer or look them up on, you know, whfoods.com. Lots of foods are high in iron. In fact, we have, if you go to the Nutrition Lab page, and okay, it's nutrients, it's like almost the bottom of the page. And it says, you know, balance your nutrients with food and look up the mineral page in there. And on the mineral page, I have a document you can download that shows for each of the major minerals, what foods, it's a list that I extracted from whfoods.com, but it shows you them in the order of how much iron is in them or how much calcium or whatever. So
on the Nutrition Lab page, under balance your nutrition, is at the bottom?
Yep, it's towards the bottom. I think there's only one section after that, but you'll see it.
Okay. Okay. And what do you do if your stomach acid is low? Is there any recommendation in terms of food?
Well, bitters, you take bitters before the meal. Again, if you go into the Nutrition Lab and there's a space that says balance your body systems with food, eating for digestive health. And then are you in the Empowered or just the Nutrition?
Nutrition.
Yeah. Yeah. That's where you would find it. If you're in Grand, there's even more detail, but you go in there and it talks about stomach acid. So bitters are the best way.
Okay. And what kind of food is the bitter food? Like, is it arugula maybe?
Arugula, dandelion. And you know, what you're going to do is either you have a tincture of bitters that you spray in your mouth about 15 minutes before your meal, or about 15 minutes before your meal, you grab some of those really bitter greens and you put them in your mouth, but you don't just chew them like you're eating them. You chew them and chew them and chew them and chew them. You keep your tongue, the receptors under your tongue, bathed in them for, you know, 5 minutes or so.
Oh yeah, I think I have a dandelion tincture.
Dandelion tincture
from Isabel, I think.
Yeah, and about 15 minutes before your meal, you do that.
Under your tongue?
Yeah, you keep it in your mouth. I mean, as best you can, you put it under your tongue, but you just swish it in your mouth and don't swallow for about 5 minutes.
And how long do you do this? Like, I mean, for a whole month or for?
Forever. Until okay, your stomach acid is better, until you know that your protein levels are good and your mineral levels are good. And some people do need
to. Why don't you energize, Sarah? You need to eat?
Oops, somebody's got themselves unmuted. I don't know who it was.
The lady before me, Margaret, I think.
Oh, it looks like she muted herself. Okay. Yeah, okay. So it's something that you may have to do. You just, you know, at least several months.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Last question, copper. Do we have any, I guess, you know, risk of, you know, from food that, you know, if copper is too much on my, in my body?
Well, if you've done a test and copper shows high, copper interferes with zinc. So again, look at those charts and see what are you eating that's high in copper. If you're eating too many nuts, sometimes that can do it. But looking up, and that's why we've given you all those resources. So you can look that up.
Is that under the mineral or that's under the digestive health?
Copper is the mineral. Copper is minerals. A mineral. So yeah.
Okay.
You'll see a chart in there. And you want to make sure your copper and zinc are balanced.
Okay. Got it.
Great.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, so next is Kimberly.
Hello.
Hello, hello.
Hi. All right, Dr. Rita Marie, on the elimination diet, okay, I'm adding back in the foods. My symptoms, the nasal congestion, I figured out is directly related to the constipation, right? So basically pretty much no matter what I eat, if I end up constipated, the nasal congestion is worse. So if I'm fasting, then it's much better. Yeah. So I fasted yesterday for the full moon because I was taking cloves and stuff for the parasites.
Yep.
So today I did the vitamin C flush because you had recommended I try that because of the constipation. So I had some questions on that. Is it okay to ask those? Okay.
Yeah, that's directly related to this. So yes. Okay.
So my questions, let me get my pad. Okay, so first of all, I had to get up to 48 grams.
Yeah.
Before I got the first big evacuation.
All right. So 75% of that would be 36. So that's your dose.
That's my dose.
Vitamin C.
Right.
Is a question about how to take that much vitamin C?
Well, that's one of them. I have a lot of questions. So my first question is, I'm still evacuating. I'm still having diarrhea like 4 hours later.
Yeah.
Is that normal?
Yeah, it is. And sometimes what I'll tell people is don't actually try to take your full dose of vitamin D, C for a couple of days if you're feeling like it really triggered things, which is good because you needed that triggering.
Right.
Get rid of it. So not
my nose feels great. Yeah. Everything feels clear.
People love the vitamin C flush because then they go, "Woo, my allergies went away. I feel great." I would wait until it settles, until you no longer have diarrhea, and then start taking the other dose.
Okay. Like, so one of my questions about that is because it says if your calibration dose is more than 50 grams, which mine was right at the borderline, you're supposed to consume at least 10% of the total later in the afternoon or evening. So do you think I should do that?
As long as you're not still irritated, you just don't want to spend your night in the toilet.
Yeah. Right? Okay.
Well, as long as it's gone back to, you know, you're okay.
Okay. And it hasn't yet. Okay. So then should it have raised my blood sugar? Because my freestyle said my blood sugar was high as 150.
Yeah. So here's the deal. It didn't really raise your blood sugar. If you had tested with a regular meter, I did.
The Keto Mojo said 81.
Yeah. Yeah. There's the vitamin C interferes with the accuracy of the freestyle when it's high enough. So if you take high doses, you'll get, I did that. I found that for myself. I'm like, what? I was sitting in the sauna. I'm like, is this thing sensitive to the sauna? Like, what is this? I didn't eat anything. And I started researching and it was vitamin C. So, and I don't know what the exact amount is, you know, it's probably if you're taking more than a few grams at a time.
Yeah. So
if I just take a normal, you know, 1 gram dose.
Okay. So probably while I'm taking this 36 grams a day, it's really no point for me to even wear the freestyle because it's going to throw my readings off. Okay. Exactly. So I'm glad.
It'll be a waste. Okay. Yeah. And well, when you take it, I would ideally like, so if you were to divide that in 3 divided doses, that's still 12 grams at a time. Right. That's a lot of vitamin C. So what you might want to do is measure out your water for the day, whatever your 2 quarts, 2.5 quarts, whatever it is, and put it in your water. Like put all of it in your water. Whether you want to put it in like 1 bottle of water and have 1 bottle of regular water and then alternate them when you're drinking it, but that way you're kind of getting that dose spread across the day and it's going to be.
And just sip the water throughout the day.
Yeah.
Does it matter if I'm taking it on with food or empty stomach?
No.
Okay. Okay. All right. Now my wife is so great. She does all these little tests and things with me. So she did it too. I thought she was relatively healthy. So I started her on the small amount, but I had to ramp it up. She ended up having to go to 39 grams.
Both of you are deficient.
Yeah. So yeah. So she's going to have to do 19 grams. Okay. So I think I'm going to have to, I really need to start that GRAN program because she's got high gluten sensitivity. So I'm thinking that's all to do with, she probably has leaky gut too. Okay. Now for the groups of foods to add back, what do you like? We're adding back a couple foods a week just based on like foods we missed, you know?
Yeah.
Do we have to like wait until the end for nuts? Like I was going to add back like walnuts. Does it matter?
No, you know, unless you wait for the end for things you already know that you're sensitive to and hope that, you know, you're cleaning things out enough that you're no longer sensitive to them. But if you've never really suspected it and you're really missing a certain nut, make sure you sprout them, you know, because it's better for you. So you soak them or just soak them for 6 hours before you eat them.
Yeah, we do soak them.
Oh yeah, you're fine.
Okay.
Yeah, and then just try them and see.
Okay. And you had mentioned at some point, like, we could start adding back foods in a group. Could you give me some ideas of what those groups are?
Like, say you're like, I've been off of cruciferous vegetables for a month. I'm going to add back broccoli, cauliflower, and kale together.
Okay.
And if they all, if it works fine, now you have three more foods you added. If it right. doesn't, then you'd have to step back.
You have to go back and test.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we've added back all of those.
And any things that are relatively rare, like things that you don't eat on a regular basis, maybe you only eat them once a week. Like, you can group a few of those together, because it's unlikely if you have symptoms every day.
Okay. So we could go back to the frequency list and pick out
exactly
the things. Okay.
The less frequent ones.
Exactly. With less frequency. Okay. Okay. And then would you recommend that we, how often should we do the flush? The vitamin C flush?
Yeah. Like, given your numbers are so high, you pay attention to it. For first of all, because you may need this amount and then your body goes, okay, I've got what I need, and then you can lower it down. So pay attention if you start to feel the discomfort in the, you know, like, okay, I'm at the edge, then you may want to like cut back and then do it again. In general, I usually recommend a month later is a good idea.
Okay, cool. Thank you so much. That's great. What's
the name that does that? I can't remember his last name anyway, but he basically does it once a week. I'm like, she said, oh yeah, you should have your people do it once a week. I'm like, fat chance. I'm not going to ask them to do something I wouldn't be willing to do. You know, well, some people might be inclined, but that's a lot of, you know, it's a lot of work.
It's a lot, because I mean, basically I can't go anywhere, because yeah, I mean, I might have to run to the bathroom.
Exactly.
I mean, you know, we can't, we're going to go to the grocery store. We can't, because.
Right.
But
a month would be more reasonable, and then you could spread it out from there once you get on a maintenance. Okay.
I read in here once a week, but my intuition was like, could that really be right? So I'm glad I asked you. Okay.
No, that's what cool. he does. Okay. But you know, Dr. Jaffe, he's the one, Russ Jaffe. And I was talking to him one time at a conference, and he's like, yeah. I said, you travel a lot. How the heck do you do that? Because I do it while I travel. I'm like, because I got it down to, I can just up the amount instead of spreading it out over 4 hours. I can do it in an hour. I'm like, okay, I'm not going to bother.
Yeah.
I'm not going there with anybody. It sounds too good.
I could barely get through like a virtual meeting for work. So I can't even imagine traveling doing it, but,
yeah.
But thank you for recommending it. I would have never known I was that low. You said there's no other way to know.
Yeah.
So I'm excited to see the changes as,
yeah,
it's and exciting. It should make my constipation like much better. Cause even when I got so at 5 teaspoons, which that's like what, 15 grams?
5 teaspoons. If it's the perk, 5 teaspoons is actually 30 grams.
Right? 30 grams.
I think
no.
It's a half a teaspoon is 1500. So a full teaspoon is 3000. Oh, so 5 would be, yeah, 15. You're right.
15 grams.
Yeah,
I was able to like have a nice like sausage long poop, like that, like an ideal one for the day.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So it should make the whole constipation situation much better. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Cool. So thank you so much. Okay.
Go.
All right, cool.
Good job.
Thank you.
All right. So Stephanie, you've been patiently waiting your turn.
Yes. In fact, I may have answered some of my own question while I was sitting here thinking about it.
Good.
But I did want to ask just a couple of quick things. One, with the vitamin C flush, is there a particular time that you recommend doing it, or just do it whenever?
I would say, you mean time of day, or do you mean time of
No,
your life?
I mean like in terms of, does it, in terms of the elimination diet, like, do we want to do
you
it
can
at
do
a
it
certain
at
point?
Any point in time? Yeah. And morning is when you want to do it. You know, you definitely want to start it in the morning. Yeah.
And where is that?
If you go to the site on the page, the nutrition lab page, where it says nutrients, you know, balancing your nutrients, and then vitamins on there is the vitamin C flush.
Okay.
And all the directions are there.
Okay. And the other quick thing that came up when you were talking about the bitters, is triphala good to use as a bitter?
It's not really. I mean, usually triphala is a powder, no. Right? No, you have a tincture of triphala?
Because it's very bitter. It's a very bitter powder.
Use it. And I probably use it. It does increase motility. So if you have problems with constipation, it can be very helpful. If it's bitter, you can do it. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Cause I saw it recommended somewhere along the way. And when I ran out of my bitters, I started using it. I don't really notice a difference in motility, but I thought the bitter taste, like you can definitely, if you put it on your tongue, it's very astringent.
You know, if you have a dandelion, somebody said earlier, well, I have a dandelion tincture, I'll try that, you know, or a burdock root or any of them. Like if you look at one of the bitters formulas, the formulas are formulated because, you know, herbalists who know what they're doing put these things together and have tried and true over years. So, you know, that combination, the synergy between the different herbs can make a difference. But if you ran out of your one, I haven't seen it, but I don't think they try it on everything, right? If somebody's not an Ayurvedic practitioner, they wouldn't have tried it with Trifala. They would have tried it with, you know, dandelion and burdock and gentian and some of the ones that are, you know, whatever. The one from, now there's warming bitters and cooling bitters, and that's another consideration, right? So if you look at Summer's company is Guts and Glory. She has one called Warming Liver Lover Bitters, right? And so they're more of a warming, but she has another one that's more of a cooling, right? So it depends on your constitution type. David Winston's is herbalist and alchemist. His is just called bitters. I mean, original or classic bitters formula. And he explains why each of those ingredients are in there. If you go to their site, Herbalist and Alchemist, I'm pretty sure it's still on there where they say, well, this is for this, and this is for this, and this is why we do it this way. And it's finding one that really works for you.
Yeah. Experimenting, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So my main question was just about, I'm a little behind, so I haven't started the elimination diet yet. I'm still preparing.
Okay.
And, you know, for me, I mean, there are certain foods that I know I want to eliminate. Like there are certain ones that I know are not agreeing with me, but I'm pretty much, you know, just in a constant state of being bloated. So it's hard for me to kind of know. And I, over the summer, was doing really well fasting. So I had thought maybe I'll just do a water fast, but I'm a little concerned because it seems like this could be a long-term process, trying to add things in, figure out what's what. And yes,
baseline for you would be not using the fasting to eliminate foods, but to actually get you to feeling good, right? If you're not eating, you're not going to get the bloating, and then you'll be starting at a good baseline.
Yeah. Okay.
And then the question would be, if everything makes you bloat, then it's more likely a SIBO type problem. In which case you may want to be looking at the FODMAP sensitivity list.
FODMAP, right.
And then looking at
antibiotics
and all that.
Okay. Because when I was fasting a lot, I intermittent fast now, but I was fasting like 36, 40 hours. I did 172 over the summer, and the bloating takes a while to go down. So, you know, even like on a 36, 40 hour fast, I didn't necessarily see that much of a difference in the bloating.
Yeah. And some people get worse from fasting because now there's nothing in there and there's some weird, you know, gut stuff. You know, sometimes you need to go like a 36 day fast, not 36, you know what I mean? A multi-week fast. So it's a tough one. I would say, if you don't suspect, there's some foods you do suspect, right? Like Christine found with the sulfur foods, right? When she took out the sulfur foods, she was like, oh my God, the bloating went down, right? So it's that.
Yeah, that's why I'm wondering, because originally I was thinking of fasting and then adding things back in, but now I'm almost thinking maybe I should go backwards. Because the other thing is also, if it's going to take me a while to figure all of this out, I've done extended like cleanses, restrictive diets in the past. And sometimes, and granted, I wasn't as educated about reintroduction, so that may have been part of it, but I've had like rebound phases, you know, like it's like my body will then suddenly I have to eat everything. And then I, you know, and I go crazy. So I want to keep it gentle on my body. Yeah, so I feel like.
And you're thin. So you don't want to like fade away to nothingness either.
Right. Right. Exactly. Like, so I'm thinking maybe doing the opposite and just gradually reducing the diet or gradually taking things out.
So I would say the two categories that I would say for you to look at would be FODMAPs and sulfur.
Okay. And that would be, let me put that down. And that would be in addition to the main irritants,
right? The phase one, everybody should do that, right?
Yeah. Okay. And then in addition, the FODMAPs.
But I would look at the FODMAP and the sulfur.
Okay. Okay, good. That gives me a good start.
Most likely you're off of most of the stuff in the phase one anyway.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I occasionally eat dairy. I occasionally have gluten, but it's rare. There, you know, I mean, I don't eat those things very often. So, yeah.
But not, yeah. You know, here's the thing with not eating them very often versus not eating them at all.
Well,
you never
exactly.
Really get to the you know, the health haven, you know, the baseline of feeling good. So
yeah, I mean, with those things, I've eliminated them for like weeks. You know, I've probably gone as long as 6 weeks to 2 months of definitely not eating. And I was like, I didn't really notice a difference, but I do know that sometimes it takes longer than
six
that. So
take, right. And if yeah. It's a gluten thing, it may be gluten and the grains, because the grains, right. So you have to figure it out, but with gluten and the dairy, I would say 6 months minimum before, you know, so yeah, if you really want to solve this problem, I would commit.
Yeah. So that's fine. So
yeah. Yeah. And then play with the FODMAPs and the sulfur.
And the sulfur. Okay, great. All right, thank you. Great.
Thank you. Well, it looks like we're good. Any other questions before we go? We good? Is this helpful? Sarah, are you doing this now, or are you just listening in for educational purposes?
Both. I'm actually fine-tuning my chemistry right now, and Steph wanted me to test out nuts and seeds and greens, but really they're just making me feel better and better and better. So
good. right. You get Joseph to do this with you?
I got him to do a little. He's eliminated a couple of things, like good. Eggs, you know, and also I was doing like chocolate every single night for like 6 months. So I think that might have like quantities, right? So
well, Isabel's liver cleanse on Sunday or Monday, I guess. So the chocolate's going to go kapooey. So
it's gone. It's gone. But, you know, I don't really even miss it. I don't even think about it. I found that fascinating.
Oh,
but,
that's great. That's really great.
But I was doing, my girlfriend Wendy has backyard chickens now, and I was eating her eggs. We were having them about once a week. Mostly I was having them because it's his favorite food and he was making the food, and oh my God, somebody's going to make the food, not
right,
me, right?
Right, right.
Oh, but as soon as I eliminated them, see, I was born with an allergy to penicillin, which is in the albumin in the eggs. I don't have any business eating those eggs. As soon as I eliminated it, everything was fine.
Everything went better. Yeah, I wouldn't even think about eggs because I got these. I just have a memory. It may not give me that again, but I have the memory of how bad those headaches were. And I don't ever want to experience that again. So eggs are like, I won't go near anything that has any, you know, hint of might having eggs in it.
Right. I'm done with them. Yeah. So that's
kind of like the last food you eat before you get food poisoning is like, you never want to eat it again. I remember a friend of mine it was a lemon meringue pie, which is not a good food to eat anyway, but he would never, ever, ever go near lemon meringue pie. May not have had anything to do with his food poisoning, but that's the last thing he remembered. And he's like, I'm not going there again. So it's just, there's the psychology there.
But it's wonderful. Yeah.
Orly says, would I review the difference between the different IGs, IGA, not IGF, there's no IGF, but IGG, IGE, IGA, IGM. So IGEs are those immediate hypersensitivities. You eat a strawberry, you get hives, right? Away, immediate. IGA are the antibodies that line all the mucous membranes. So the gut, the vagina, the sinuses, the lungs. And they're there, they're on guard, they're waiting, right? You're just going to throw me something and I'm going to hit you with it and boom, right? So that's actually a good test for I'm not a food allergy testing fan, but the one I've seen to have the most effect is IgA in the stool. Most people don't want to test their stool, but you test your stool and you can test for IgA. The unfortunate thing is there's only one company that does it, and they only do about a dozen foods. They don't do more than that. But you don't have to start eating the food again, because those are your shoulder soldiers. They're just waiting. They're just waiting. It doesn't matter if you've had that thing 20 years ago or 5 minutes ago. Those soldiers are still waiting. IgG are delayed hypersensitivity, and they're in your bloodstream, and they're measured if you do an IgA test. Now, they may not show up for 3 or 4 days after the exposure, you know, or they'll peak. They may not show up, not 3 or 4 days, but they'll take a little bit more time. The symptoms may not show up for 3 or 4 days until they peak. And then those are the kind that if you're testing for on an allergy test, they say, oh, you have to eat these foods regularly for a month before you get it tested. It'll be a false negative. Like, yes, seriously, you want me to go back and eat gluten just so I can see if I'm allergic to gluten? no, thank you very much. I'm not doing it, you know, I'm not going there. So those are the three. And then IgMs are not tested very much, but they're more of a later stage kind of thing. So that's
Dr. Rita Marie, on the IgAs, you said it's tested via the stool. So I had a stool test done and it said I had low secretory IgA. Is that the same thing that you're talking about?
Yeah, let me explain that. So that didn't test for specific IgAs to specific foods. It just tested for how much IgA. If you have low secretory IgA in your stool, then that all bets are off as to that test being accurate because you're not creating those anyway. So that's an immune system. Your immune system needs support to be able to make more. A couple of things can support that. One, vitamin A. Vitamin A is super important for making those secretory IgAs. Number two, having good probiotics. So basically, if you make sure your bifidobacter is in good shape. Number three, amla and triphala, which we were talking about earlier. Amla is in triphala, but you can take it as triphala, will help to supply that. And number four is HeartMath. We found that the secretory IgA, when you're under stress, is going to be low. And it's going to be low. And then when you do the HeartMath, it goes to normal. And HeartMath site actually has some diagrams of that, like they actually measuring it compared to cortisol levels and the IgA. So it's kind of interesting. So it's looking at now, how do you support your immune system to better fight off whatever goes in?
Thank you.
You're welcome. Orly says, I remove foods and histamines and oxalates and looking at salicylates. What are the appropriate amounts of things that are ones we need to eliminate? I don't know what that really means. How much spinach can you eat and how often? With oxalates, you know, if you have a true oxalate sensitivity and you've measured it, I mean, you may not be able to eat spinach at all for a while, right? And then it may be just a little few sprigs here and there kind of thing. Yeah, it does. Yeah, if you have an oxalate sensitivity, I'd be off spinach for a while. Check Anna Kabeka for Pure Pea. Oh, she has Pure Pea? I thought she had a whole lot of herbs in her protein powder. Her protein powder tastes amazing, quite frankly. For whatever reason, it has a very smooth texture, but it's not just one ingredient. It does have a lot of other stuff in it, but it is really good. It's really good. I haven't tested her new one. I think she has a new one that's chocolate. I haven't tested that one yet because I'm afraid I'll get addicted to it. I think it's keto something. It has the word keto in it. But if you go to her site, I think it says like keto protein. I think she repackaged it lately. And maybe keto green, like her book. I'm not sure. You know,
Dr. Rita Marie, it's keto alkaline.
Keto alkaline. Shake.
That's the vanilla.
Okay.
And it doesn't spike my blood sugar. So that's it's awesome. Tastes good and it doesn't spike.
Yeah. Well, it does have quite a number of ingredients though, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it does. Yeah. And it is pea. And I don't know if it's only pea protein or there's some other, it's vegan, but I don't know if there's other types
of protein. There might be rice in there. I'm not sure.
Yep.
Yeah. Oh, so David asked about your embedded needle tip. Who was that that was talking about that? Attached to a magnet. That's interesting. Like if that would be like magnet therapy, putting a magnet, if you've got an embedded piece of metal, because they always say, be careful if you have like a joint, like I have metal in my joint and where I got my bone put back together. And so you don't want to put a magnet near that because... So I wonder, that would be kind of interesting. And what was the homeopathic silica about, Sarah? Oh, expel splinters, maybe remove the needle. Yeah. And Orly says homeopathic lidum. Yeah. Oh, good. Stevia free, huh? GI cleanse, sugar and stevia free. I think she just sweetens it with Lohan, but Kimberly put the link in there. Might just, be something that you can graduate to.
Okay. I just ordered it. So thank you all for your help.
Great. And you can test it. You know, it could be a test. All right. Good. All right, guys. Have a great rest of the day. I will come on for a short while tomorrow before my class at noon. So if anybody has any more questions, or, you know, mostly for people who couldn't make it today. I know Ronnie said she couldn't make it today, and there were a couple of others. So I'll be on tomorrow as well to help you get through this. And I'll be on the class at 3:00. It's on oxalates. So I'm going to be making some foods that are low oxalate, and we'll be having fun. You can guarantee that there'll be arugula and avocados in my meal, but we'll see. I want to make some fun stuff as well, as, you know, not just boring old, here's a plate of arugula, have fun with it type of thing, you know? All right, guys, have a great one. I'm going to see you soon. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
You're welcome.